Queen. And right now you hear the voice of Yara Allen, musicologist.
Yes.
And that is the voice of none other than our own Reverend Graylin Hagler, who is part of the Poor People's Campaign. My name is Katia Stitt. We're here in Washington, D.C., and we're joined by, of course, Joni Eisenberg, our co-host this evening. Welcome, Reverend Hagler.
Good evening. It's good to be here.
Reverend Hagler, we never hear you be so quiet.
You never know me to be so quiet?
No. So explain to the listeners out there the vibrations and the power that's in this room.
Well, you know, we've marched up from the Wilson Building to the Church of the Epiphany here on G Street, and the place is full, and there's lots of singing that's going on and hand clapping right now as folks sort of get moved and lifted up and empowered and feel the spirit to move towards issues of justice that we need so desperately to address at this time here in this country right now. But not only in this country, because one of the things that I was reflecting on today, because sometimes we forget that the posture of this country is the same posture that we carry out around the world, right? It's the same kind of racism we carry out around the world. It's the same kind of oppression of poor people that is carried on around the world. Because in a sense, you know, it is really a struggle between two wills, right? The will of justice and the will of those who just want to feed themselves and are narcissistic, egotistical, and that's what we're struggling to do.
Again, Yara Allen leading the group, the congregation tonight in a rousing call.
We want justice.
Getting the crowd going. You know, I want to say to those that would say a Bernie Sanders can't win, they're not in this room tonight.
They're not in this room.
They don't understand the plight of many of us who are working class, poor, as Reverend Barber says, low wealth, you know. But, you know, that's everyone, honestly, but the 1%. Really, on one way or another, you're affected.
Well, that's the greatest delusion in America.
Yes.
Is how you get poor people to operate against their own best interests, right? And really, in a sense, to think that a millionaire cares about them, or a billionaire cares about them, or big corporations or big business cares about them, that's never been the reality.
Right.
The reality is that they look at poor people as cogs in the wheel,
exactly,
so their wheel of corporate industry can turn. And it gets even more pronounced when you put in race, because obviously what we're experiencing right now in this country and in this world is some of the most virulent resurgence of racism that we've ever experienced. And just the stuff that happened in terms of the deal of the century on Palestine, for example.
Right.
Purely racist. Purely an apartheid system, again, that's been propped up by the United States. All of the stuff that's going on in this country against poor folks right now is the same kind of scenario as what's happened over there. The dispossession of a indigenous president in Bolivia because he was indigenous,
right,
and wanted folks not to loot his land,
right,
was thrown out of office. Over and over again, the same kind of racist dynamic, because you see, they can always tolerate people of color if people of color becomes representative of those kind of that kind of greed and that kind of corporate interest.
Absolutely. We're going to thank you, Dr. Reverend Hagler. And again, I know I'm just so overwhelmed.
It's very powerful.
I can't, you know, centering. We're going to go back to the podium right now. You are in tune to WPFW and WBAI's very special broadcast of the mass meeting here in D.C. I'm joined by Reverend Graylin Hagler, Joni Eisenberg. I'm Katia Stitt. Now to the podium.
Co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. Let's receive now Ms. Julia Peter.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for giving me a few moments to speak. I mostly just came to share our gratitude at the Center for Popular Democracy Action. We brought people today to D.C. To stand up for this sham trial. I have to tell you, we had people on buses for 24 hours. We had people take red eyes from across the country with stops, layovers. I think I'm heard we reached 1,000 people today, and yeah. And, you know, aside from the articles of impeachment, we know that the occupant of the White House has betrayed us from day one, from the Muslim bans to kids in cages and so much more. So it's so important that we showed up here today. These senators really think they're going to get away with this sham trial without hearing witnesses, without hearing documents. But the truth is we're watching and we're going to remember, and November is coming. And I just want to say, I was talking to Roz this morning, and I don't think it's a coincidence or an accident, you know, that you all also had programming planned in D.C. today, and you all also traveled here. I think that was kind of meant to be. And when we were able to announce to our folks that the Poor People's Campaign was going to come and Dr. Reverend Barber was going to speak, I can't tell you, like, the electricity that went through our group. It was really a surge of excitement. So thank you so much. I hate that we have to do these fights, but I'm so glad that we get to do it with you. So thank you.
Our democracy is in trouble.
Our democracy is in trouble.
And we come to demand.
And we come to demand.
Second warning.
Because it's crucial that we make ourselves heard.
We are the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. And we are here. We are poor. We are clergy. And we're here to say to our nation's capital and to the highest court in this land that everybody has a right to live. Everybody has a right to learn. Everybody has a right to love. Everybody has a right to living wages. Everybody has a right to vote. Everybody has a right to thrive. To thrive in this society.
Everybody say,
oh! I believe that we will win.
I believe that we will win.
Antonio Bonilla!
Freedom fighter, and he taught us how to fight.
The poor and the clergy. We read Article 6 of the Kentucky State Constitution that says we have a right to free assembly.
We are demanding that we stop the war on our poor.
There are 140 million poor and low-wealth people in this country, almost half of this nation. And any nation that ignores half of its people is in a moral and economic crisis.
So we will.
So we will.
Do more.
Do more.
There will be a movement will break through the town and bring people together to save the heart and the soul of this democracy and this world.
Everybody,
everybody
has a right,
has a right
to live,
to live.
Health care,
health care.
Everybody,
everybody,
don't stop.
The Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, has come up with a series of demands, and I want you to say those demands after I say them.
I know that you are here for the same reason we all are here. Our elected official on notice. We demand an immediate restoration of the Voting Rights Act. We demand an end to racist gerrymandering. We demand a reversal of state laws that prevent municipalities from raising minimum wage.
We demand a just immigration system. We demand a timely citizenship process that guarantees everyone the right to vote.
We demand an end to military aggression and warmongering. We demand a stop to privatization of military budget and any increase in military spending. We demand a ban on assault rifles and a ban on the easy access of firearms. We demand an end to federal programs that send military equipment into local and state communities. We demand that the call to build a wall at the U.S.-Mexico border be ceased.
We demand a ban on fracking, mountaintop removal, coal mining, coal ash ponds, and offshore drilling. We demand a ban on all new pipelines, refineries, and coal, oil, and gas export terminals.
We demand an immediate implementation of federal and state living wage laws. We demand the right for all workers to form and join unions. We demand equal pay for equal work. We demand a guaranteed annual income. We demand fully funded anti-poverty programs that protects the welfare of us all. We demand decent housing. We demand free tuition. We demand free tuition. We demand equity in education. We demand an end to the resegregation of schools. We demand equitable funding for historically black colleges and universities. We demand relief from crushing household, student, and consumer debt. We demand the repeal of the 2017 federal tax law. And we demand that the wealthy and corporations pay their fair share. We believe that we can win. We believe that we can win. We believe that we can win. We believe that everybody has a right, to live,
I want you to know that when hands that once picked cotton join hands of Latino, join hands of progressive white, join faith hands and labor hands and Asian hands and Native American hands and poor hands and wealthy hands with a conscience and gay hands and straight hands and trans hands and Christian hands and Jewish hands and Muslim hands and Hindu hands and Buddhist hands, when we all get together, we are an instrument of redemption. When we join hands, we can revive and make sure that the promise of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness and equal protection under the law is never taken away from anybody. So I got a question. Are the rejected ready to revive and declare that this land is your land? This land is my land. State House to the White House, the rejected are going to demand that this nation never give up on being one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
When do we want it? What do we want? When do we want it? If we don't get it, if we don't get it, if we don't get it. Good evening, Washington, D.C. Good evening, the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. It is so good to be with folk tonight, and you look absolutely beautiful. This evening, we are gathered to rise together, to demonstrate the power of poor and impacted people banding together, demanding that this country change for the better, to call for a radical redistribution of political and economic power, a revolution of moral values, to show that we must do more. More mobilizing, more organizing, more registering, more educating people for a movement that vote. And we are here to rise together at the Mass Poor People's Assembly and Moral March on Washington. And when is that? June 20, 2020. Say it one more time.
June 20, 2020.
So this evening, I want to talk with you about our demands. Demands. The dictionary defines the word demand to ask for with authority, to claim as a right, an urgent, pressing requirement. And the same dictionary defines power as the ability to act, the capacity to direct the course of events, a right or authority, and a supernatural being, deity, or force. Frederick Douglass, while he was even in this neighborhood saying, agitate, 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 working to abolish slavery, said this about demands: power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. Ida B. Wells, confronting lynching, said, if this work can arouse the conscience of the American people to a demand for justice for every citizen and punishment by law for the lawless, I shall feel I have done a service. Bayard Rustin, as he was planning the 1963 March on Washington, said, we demand the segregation be ended in every school district. We demand that we have effective civil rights legislation, and that includes decent housing, integrated education, the right to vote. And right before he was killed, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, together with Cesar Chavez and the National Welfare Rights Organization, coal miners in Kentucky, the Jewish Federation, started to build the Poor People's Campaign, saying this: our nettlesome task is to discover how to organize our strength into compelling power so that the government cannot elude our demands. It would be the height of naivete to wait passively until the administration had somehow been infused with such blessings of goodwill that it implored us for our programs. Even the Bible has much to say about demands, especially what God demands of the nations and what God's people must demand of those with power and authority. Micah 6 says, "What does the Lord demand of you? But to do justice, to love kindness, to walk humbly with your God." Leviticus demands that we welcome the immigrant stranger. Deuteronomy demands that nations forgive debts, outlaw slavery, pay people what they deserve. Isaiah demands that our politicians stop passing laws that deprive the poor of their rights. In Luke, John the Baptist demands that the military and ruling authorities stop extorting money, spreading lies. The Gospels tell stories of Jesus turning over tables, engaging in holy disruption, committing himself even unto death to demand justice for the poor. These justice leaders remind us that movements don't just curse the darkness. We don't just awake the nation to what is wrong, but we come together in power with demands. We rise together and claim our rights. As the Poor People's Campaign has been traveling across the nation, weaving together a moral fusion movement of the poor and clergy and activists and organizers, we have heard the demands of poor moms in Detroit and Maine whose children have been taken away because they are homeless, without water. Moms who have demanded, "Take away our poverty, not our children." Longtime residents of St. James Parish and St. John the Parish who are battling Formosa, yet another petrochemical company trying to get a permit to set up shop in Cancer Alley, Louisiana, cry out, "Victory is mine. Victory is mine. We told Formosa to get thee behind, and victory today is mine." Leaders with the Homeless Union of California who assert that we are homeless but not helpless, who demand an end to steamrolling homeless encampments, to end criminalizing the poor when it should be a crime to have poverty in this rich nation. Preachers in Alabama who remind us that poor people are not sinners, but that poverty is a sin against God that God demands be ended. And farm workers in Immokalee, Florida, who demand dignity and living wages and respect, who say, "No somos tractores. We are not tractors. We are humans." The Poor People's Campaign has a powerful moral agenda, a powerful set of demands. We have a Poor People's Moral Budget where we demonstrate that if the nation cuts the military budget and makes this country safer, if we tax those who can afford it the most and invest in things like healthcare and education and living wage jobs and voting rights, we indeed can end systemic racism. We can end poverty, ecological devastation, militarism, and we can confront this distorted moral narrative that blames poor people for poverty. tries to pit us against each other and feeds us the lie of scarcity when we live in a land of beautiful abundance. Our movement has found and is showing that we can, in fact, enact our demands now. Immediately. We do not have a scarcity of resources. We have a scarcity of political will. But what is powerful enough to change that will is the stories and solutions of the real heroes and heroines of this nation. Some of the 140 million poor and low wealth people who are part of this new and unsettling force for change. Leaders who, in the words of Nick Smith from the Fight for 15, whose backs are against the wall, and all we can do is push. Well, Washington, D.C., I have the honor of introducing you next to some of these very leaders who are demanding justice, who are banding together to fight for all that is good and right, who can come forward with our stories and our solutions and say, we can win. So I'm going to introduce you to some of the real heroes and heroines of this city and of this nation. We're lucky enough to be here in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, and to have folks who are impacted and fighting back in D.C. and who are fighting back and impacted from states across the country. We say in our work that we stand together because we stand together. So I'm going to invite the testifiers from Washington, D.C. to come up together. And when folk are done telling their stories, we ask that you join us not by clapping, but by saying somebody has been hurting our people and it's gone on far too long and we won't be silent anymore. So I introduce to you Cheryl Brunson, Carla Mendez Guerrero, people from Vendedores Unidos and Many Language One Voice, and Lark Cato. Please come up this evening and share your stories.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Cheryl Brunson, and I'm with the Tenant Association of Brooklyn Manor in Ward 5. The developers are trying to throw us out of our community. They're jailing us in our own neighborhood. The legislators allow this to happen to us. The developers are making part of our neighborhood private. And the other part is, I guess we say, I could say this, you can walk on it. But there's no line to divide the private part and the part that's not private. And here's the deal. I've been there 30 plus years. Ain't none of it was private. It was our home. You understand? It was generations and generations of families there. You know, we were like family. You keep my family, they keep our family, we keep each other's family, you feed our family, we feed your family. It was beautiful. The largest places in the world, they're using our property as a cash cow. The mayor gave the developers $47 million to build on our property and put us out of our property. They're jailing our teenagers for leaning on the fence, for standing in on the porch, for standing in front of the apartment buildings. It brings tears to my eyes. It's breaking my heart. The neighbors that I used to have are no more there. They're They're not neighbors anymore because they're homeless. It's really sad. I can't begin to tell you, because I don't have enough time to tell you how many of our neighbors are homeless now. They're blocking off bedrooms to make it 2 bedrooms, 3 bedrooms. They're making 3 bedrooms, 2 bedrooms. It's sad. They're going up on the rent. They're making these apartments market rent. The tenant association work, and we stand strong, and we're going to continue to stand strong to say, hell no, we won't go.
Somebody's been hurting our people, and it's gone on far too long, and we won't be silent anymore.
Ready? Okay, good evening. My name's Megan Macraeg. I'm the organizer for the Comité Laboral with Many Languages, One Voice. And I'm here with Byron Lemos and Genesis Lemos. Hey, Genesis, you want to just say hi?
Hi, my name is Genesis.
You want to say hi, Byron? You want to say hi to these nice people? Not yet. Okay. Well, I'm glad we're toning things down a little bit, because people who have been living in the violence and trauma of poverty and police brutality and in the shadow of empire trying to eke out a living here in D.C. are traumatized, you know? And these kids are very brave. So, as a single mama, when I got a phone call from a panicked single mama who was a member of Vendedores Unidos, and that means Vendors United, I responded immediately. Her name is Ana Lemos, and it's the brave mother of these children. And I was a half hour drive away, you know? So I called our friends at Sanctuary DMV and James Plasser and Andrew Hamilton from First Church. Are you guys here? Will you stand up if you're here? Are y'all here? Andrew? James? Okay, it doesn't look like they're here, but without them, we wouldn't have been able to respond, because the police had crushed Genesis to the ground for selling tamales and atol de elote in front of the Panam Bakery in Columbia Heights. They got there first. Enrique, one of our street vendors, had filmed the whole thing. We've been organizing as Vendedores Unidos because vendors are out in the street because they can't pay the rent. Right now, Gloria, who is going to join us, is hustling to sell tamales because she's got to pay the rent. But the kids came out. So the police crushed Genesis to the ground, but we were there. And the whole community was family and responded. And we went to the police station, to the children's hospital, where the police continued to try to separate this family. And we fought them off until 1:30 in the morning together. Vendedores Unidos is organizing because street vending is criminal here in D.C. It is a misdemeanor and a $300 ticket at the minimum to be trying to live. And everyone has the right to live. And so these kids were trying to live. And so the children have led the way in the campaign. Vendedores Unidos can now fill up a room with 100 people. Of system-impacted people here in the district. They kicked down the doors of DCRA. They're going to get permits to vend, but they're going on to fight to make sure that vending is decriminalized and that working poor people and poor people are not criminalized because they're trying to live. So I was just hoping Byron might want to say a little thing, because since the kids talked at the press conferences for a week straight, it's been really hard to talk in public. And I want to invite Byron maybe to say some small thing if he wants, or Genesis. You want to say some small thing to the people here, Myanmar? No? Not now? Not now? Okay, let's ask your sister. You want to say some small thing, Genesis? Okay, all right. Well, you'll see more of her. She's a lion, and she's fought the police and helped everybody win. And we have to hold those wins
close to our heart. So maybe we can just thank them for having hope, despite the fact that they're 15 and 8 years old. Yeah.
So let's give them a great round of applause.
And as we applaud them, we say, somebody is hurting our children, and it's gone on far too long, and we won't be silent anymore. So I have Lark and then Carla.
Hi, my name is Lark. I was adopted and my mother is a black woman who has suffered from mental illness her entire life, but was ignored and mistreated because she was poor. I ran away at 17. I was a homeless teen mother, but having kids was my way of creating a family I always wanted. I never had a normal relationship with my mother because she was never treated for her diagnosis of paranoid schizophrenia while raising me. The healthcare system failed me and her. The combination of an unstable mother and living in an unsafe neighborhood made me feel like a worthless human being. I lost hope for myself and for my children and was considering suicide. I learned that a court system is built to destroy black families. I wasn't notified when she was taken to the hospital, and I'm being blocked from talking to her doctors. I carry a pain every day knowing our entire life could have been different if she received the treatment she deserved. Waiting until she is endangering herself or others is not the solution towards helping the mentally ill. This continues the hurtful cycle of inadequate health care and stigmatizes the mentally ill. This is shameful. She didn't get a choice to stay in her own home. She didn't get to keep her things. I should have been able to take care of her, but I spend my time fighting the system that profits to keep her the ward of the state. For too long, the lawmakers have ignored the pain and struggle of poor people. The mayor's fair shot, which sounds good, but is more harmful than helpful. It blames the poor for their poverty. I am not a bad mother because my kids stole food, because they are hungry, because they don't receive enough of food for school lunch. I'm not a bad daughter because I can't afford a lawyer. We need our taxpayer dollars for proper housing and health care for our DC residents so our families don't suffer like we have. Legislators need to use our tax dollars to not fund wars, not to fund their lifestyles or dog parks, but to have the nerve to tell us to do better. We should all be mad, but being mad isn't enough. We must resist. I fight for my mother. I fight for my kids. I fight for our families. They may be able to ignore me, but if we stand together, they can't ignore 140 million poor people in this country if we stand together.
Somebody has been hurting our families, and it's gone on far too long, and we won't be silent anymore.
Hello. I'm thrilled to be a part of this event tonight, representing the deaf community. Let me introduce myself. My name is Carla Mendez Guerrero. I am deaf, and I'm a second year at Gallaudet University. I'm majoring in psychology, and I'm also part of student body government. I am the director of equity. And I'd like to talk about the impact of poverty in my community. Unemployment in our community is so high. Many deaf people have to rely on supplemental security income. But that's not enough for us to live on. Because the payments we get are an average of just $771 a month. Who can afford to live on just $771 a month? I myself am the first in my family to go to college. And I do admit I've been struggling financially. My father's income increased recently, but then that resulted in them cutting my financial aid. So his increase in income isn't enough to support my schooling. College is so expensive, I'm overwhelmed. There are actually 120 students at Gallaudet that have had to leave school due to financial issues. They can't afford food, their dorm, their transportation. That's actually 10% of our undergrad student body at Gallaudet. We're trying to follow our dreams, but they seem impossible without support. And it's hard for our community if they leave college. It's even harder for them then to find a job because of the discrimination that we face from employers. And there's also just not enough good paying jobs to help us survive. And I believe this is not right. As a member of this community, well, recently our president has proposed cuts in SSI and SSD. And that means that some of us won't be able to afford health care. I am here because I believe that the Poor People's Campaign is the right battle for us. I believe that we need equality, and that we all need the opportunity to live. Thank you.
Been hurting our people, and it's gone on far too long, and we won't be silent anymore.
Reverend Liz, let me interject just a little bit. Now, y'all sound all right, but you don't sound like you have any righteous indignation. And the other folk that don't care, they are loud. And when people come up here and testify, we don't clap. We normally, what they ask us to do is join them in this acclamation. Can we do it? So let's say it like we mean it. Somebody hurting our people.
Hurting our people.
And it's gone on.
Gone on.
Far too long.
Far too long.
And we won't be silent.
And we won't be silent.
Anymore.
Anymore. So we are in the nation's capital, and we just heard stories and solutions coming out of Washington, D.C., but we need to make connections to this being the nation's capital and stories happening all over the country like they're happening here. So I want to introduce Wes White, Wenzel Nosey, and Hope out of California, Arizona, and Pennsylvania, who will share what else is happening in this country. I ask folks to come up together because we stand together because we stand together.
All right. Good evening. My name is Wes White, and I represent the California Homeless Union. We are here because we know that homelessness is the most visible expression of poverty, that our union movement is part of a broader struggle against a system that has failed. In the wealthiest state, human beings are living in chicken coops, on gas station rooftops, on the river bottoms. Our children are being stolen from us simply because we cannot afford housing. Entire families spend the night in cars, running the engines to stay warm and dying from carbon monoxide poisoning as a result. Our camps are being bulldozed and our possessions destroyed on a daily basis. Where I live in Monterey County, 6,000 students do not have a house to live in, and so we are organizing in the schools because you can't do your homework when you don't have a home. Up and down California and everywhere we go, we bring the Poor People's Campaign with us because it's hard to say you're better than someone else or don't have anything in common when you're living on a river bottom or sleeping in a cardboard box. Here is where a new movement is rising. Here is where we are bringing together those who have nothing left to lose. Here is where we say, homeless, not helpless. Power to the Homeless Union. Power to the Poor People's Campaign. Thank you.
Somebody!
Somebody!
Hurting our people!
Hurting our people!
And it's going on!
It's going on!
Far too long!
Far too long!
And we won't be silent!
And we won't be silent!
Anymore!
Anymore!
I hear Pickle Nan. She thought she couldn't stay. Because you're less to walk, couldn't ya? I give thanks to the Creator for all the blessed gifts that He's placed upon us, and also to watch each and every one of us. Today, I sit here and I look at the sign, June 20. 2020, it's a very big day for all of us. For over 500 years, Native Americans have suffered, from the beginning to where I stand today and for those yet to come. In the prophecy, there's a time then people will once again come together as brothers and sisters. But we have to hear that calling. We have to be a part of that. So when I look at this, June 20, 2020, it also reminds me of a thing that we're facing. This year in July, our holy mountain in Arizona, the land transfer is going to take place, where the United States government will award a foreign company a holy place that holds copper and minerals, that 75% will leave this country. And yet today, they talk about China, Iran, they talk about all these things across the ocean that yet here were hypocrites. So today, when you were marching on the streets and bringing the word, the blessing of a change of tomorrow for our children, I walked the halls of Congress telling them of you and what you are doing and why Native Americans are pulling with the Poor People's Campaign. Because if the road is spiritual, we must all be on the spiritual road. And it has to be spiritual, because what we are fighting is something deep, deep, deep within people that have misguided us. So when we say there's a deception, that deception is also on you, on how America was first formed. And now it takes us to rebuild that for tomorrow, for our children. And there's nothing wrong to tell them the truth. Because if our children are told the truth, then better decisions will be made. And those are the responsibilities that we have as people, as human beings, no matter what color we are, no matter what we come from. There are all trails to the top of the mountain. And that trail leads to the same place where our Creator, who is known throughout the world, sits. And those are the responsibility that we have to our children and to the world. Because without Mother Earth, we have nothing. All these arguments are meaningless. But as we put efforts, as we do today and continue to do, then the world will begin to heal, and we will heal from this deception. So again, in everything that we do together is very important. So that, June 20, 2020, is very important for all of us. Because the more we speak, the more we'll listen, and the more we'll join. Yeah. Thank you.
Somebody!
Somebody!
Hurting our people!
Hurting our people!
And it's going on!
It's going on!
Far too long!
Far too long!
And we won't be silent!
And we won't be silent!
Anymore!
Anymore!
Good evening. My name is Hope Koss, and I am a coordinator with Put People First PA from Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Johnstown is one of the poorest towns in the state. I was born into poverty, and I grew up poor. I knew I couldn't afford to go to college, so I joined the military to get access to things like healthcare, education, and housing. The poverty draft is very real. I was then faced with discrimination as a woman in the military and got sent home. I experienced homelessness, having to have different family members and friends take me in when I returned home. My plan was to enlist for at least 6 years, so I had no home to return to when plans fell through. But I knew I had to continue to fight, so after some time, I joined Put People First PA, and there I was introduced to the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. I joined Put People First and the Poor People's Campaign because I could not stand silently by and watch others be hurt by the same poverty draft that so deeply affected me. Currently, in Put People First PA, we are fighting for healthcare as a human right in a state where UPMC, the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, is the largest employer. This $20 billion nonprofit, let me repeat that, $20 billion nonprofit controls many of the hospitals across the state, a bevy of specialists, and even an insurance company bearing its name. They buy failing rural hospitals under the pretense of reviving them, and they let them fail, so they can rezone the property and resell it, making millions, while the residents in the area who relied on those hospitals die because they cannot afford to travel to the next town to gain access to the health care that they need. In less than a year, they did this to the residents of Lancaster and more recently, Sunbury, Pennsylvania. This trend cannot continue because folks are paying with their lives. So on June 20th, 2020, Pennsylvania will join the Moral March on Washington, D.C. to fight for all of those who have been harmed by this so we can save our lives.
Somebody's been hurting our people, and it's gone on far too long,
and we won't be silent anymore.
If you're able to, would you stand with me?
Hurting our children.
and it's gone on far too long. Yes, it's gone on far too long. I tell you that it's gone on far too long. Oh, somebody is hurting our children, and it's gone on far too long. And we won't be silent. We won't be silent anymore. Now, have you heard? Somebody is poisoning the water.
That's it.
And it's gone on far too long. Yes, it's gone on far too long. I tell you, it's gone on far too long. Oh, somebody is poisoning the water, and it's gone on. It's gone on far too long. Y'all, we can't be silent. We can't be silent anymore. Oh, somebody's hurting my brother, and it's gone on. Yes, it's gone on. I tell you, it's gone on. Oh, somebody's hurting my brother, and it's gone on. Yeah, and we won't be silent anymore. Well, if we've been just a little too quiet, you know it's gone on. Yes, it's gone on. You know it's gone on, and we won't be silent anymore. Have you heard? Somebody's taking our health care, and it's gone on. Yes, it's gone on. Taking our health care, and it's gone on, and we won't be silent anymore. Oh, somebody's hurting our babies, and it's gone on. Oh, it's gone on. Gone on. Oh, somebody's hurting our babies, and it's gone on. And we won't be silent anymore. And we won't be silent anymore. And we won't be silent anymore. We won't be silent. We won't be silent anymore. No, we won't be silent anymore.
here's what I want you to do without the music, without the music. And we won't be silent anymore. Stay right there with that. Sing that again. And we won't be silent anymore. Come on and sing that again. We won't be silent. We won't be silent anymore. Last time, we won't be silent. And we won't be silent anymore.
We won't be silent anymore. We won't be silent anymore. The beautiful words, composition of Yara Allen, theomusicologist right here at the Poor People's Campaign. That's the voice in the background of Reverend Barber. We're not going to take up a lot of time, but we want to remind you that you're in tune to WPFW's and WBAI
and
in New York
WBAI
City.
Yes. In New York.
And you're
my
here
hometown
with Katia Stitt.
And 99.5 and 89.3.
That's right. Sister stations.
We are sisters together.
And in just a moment, we'll be at the top of the hour. And so we're going to talk just a moment over Reverend Barber, because we're going to talk to the top of the hour very quietly. Joni, we heard a lot of testimony, and it was testimony that was in part DC-centric, but all of those stories, all too familiar narratives across this country, and you
and
were
across the world,
and across the world,
and definitely the healthcare resonated with me. But when the Native American brother was talking about copper, mm-hmm, and this country stealing his land because of copper, I had a flashback to 1973, mm-hmm, which is the first September 11th,
yes,
when this country was instrumental in overthrowing Allende.
That's
and
right.
It was because of what? Copper.
Yes.
They wanted the copper.
Yes.
So it's the same story when we're talking about Washington, D.C., New York City, Arizona, or Chile, or Venezuela.
Well, you know, and when we talk about health care, I can't help but think about what our brothers and sisters in New York as well face with not having access. When we talk about education and the police brutality that happens there, and the oppression and repression happening in the great state of New York as well. So it's
absolutely not... Absolutely, and it's happening all over this country. It says, we know this country was founded in white supremacy, slavery, injustice, but we not...
And genocide.
But and we genocide.
Yes.
We won't be silent any longer.
We absolutely
and
will.
And we haven't been silent, actually, over the centuries.
No. It's very quiet now. We're going to go back to the stage, but I want to let you know that you're in tune to WPFW in Washington, 89.3 FM, and streaming at WPFWFM.org. And in New York, Joni?
And in New York, 99.5.
W-B-A-I.
And I hope my mother in Queens is still listening, Mom.
WBAI in New York, and streaming
on WPFW.
Oops. And streaming at WBAI.org. Back to Reverend Barber.
Quiet.
Reverend Hoover to be here in this church. Been with your bishop in Atlanta. I'm so thankful to be here tonight with Reverend Jackson and Rob Stevens, Reverend Rob Stevens, who are leading our organizing team at offices right here in D.C. Let's give it up for Dr. Jackson. Now, we don't allow any politicians on our stage not because we hate politicians. We actually are very political. We're just nonpartisan. And we know we have work to do on both parties, maybe one more than the other, but on both parties. And the reason we know that is because our inside folk tell us we got work to do. And they tell us that they need more leverage. But tonight, I do want to take a moment to acknowledge I'm going to acknowledge two that I see I might get to three. Okay. But I'm acknowledged, too, that I know. I see the Julianne over there. That's Malva over there. She ought to be in Congress. In fact, she ought to have Senator McConnell's job, but that's another. Yeah, I got her. But I want to do something specific. My team is helping me because they know I got problems. I really do. But on this one, I know what I'm doing. And that is, I want to acknowledge two sisters that I've known who have been midwives of justice, like Shipra and Pua. And they have kept alive the call for the Congress to deal with poverty, even after being ignored year after year, sometimes by their own party. See, I'm going to just say it like it ought to be said. But we thank God for Barbara Lee and Sheila Jackson Lee for keeping alive the call that this nation is not what it ought to be, and particularly Barbara Lee, that this nation cannot be what it ought to be until we deal with the issue of poverty. For 20-some years, she's been saying that. And we also know that when everybody else said we ought to go to Iraq and Afghanistan, Barbara Lee said, I don't know much, but I know a dead cat is on the line somewhere. And now all these years later, all this revelation is proving that though she was castigated and people wanted to kill her, the truth has come always full circle and proved that she was right to stand up to America's military power. Sometimes you gotta stand on what you believe. My grandma said, what you believe. And we certainly want to thank Sister Lawrence as well for being here on tonight. Now, I don't come in late because I'm just late. I'm nursing a knee, trying to make it through this whole piece. We all battle with something. Everybody has some challenge. Moses couldn't talk. Elijah had bits of depression and bipolarism. Jesus was acquainted with sorrow. Dr. King could hardly breathe after he was stabbed by a black woman. Harriet Tubman had epilepsy fits. But those things are no excuses for us not to use our lives for the benefit of others. So I beg your pardon when we have to sometimes rest a little bit in order to run a little bit further. Wednesday of last week, I want to come at this poverty thing a little different tonight, Liz. And isn't Liz Theo Harris powerful, our co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign? My sister beloved. Wednesday of last week, before the House managers began their opening statements in the impeachment trial of Donald J. Trump, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell stood by his desk on the Senate floor and conferred at length with White House counsel Pat Capone. When Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer noticed their excited gestures from across the aisle, he cupped a hand to his ear and made a show of trying to listen in. Members of the media who were confined to the press gallery took note and chuckled. Let me have the king. The acquittal Trump had demanded of Senate Republicans was all but assured, and McConnell felt no need to pretend impartiality. But the corruption that is regularly laughed off in our age of political cynicism makes me shudder as the son of civil rights activists who risked their lives to expand American democracy in the 20th century. The coordinated cover-up, somebody say cover-up, We are witnessing as 53 senators conspire to facilitate Trump's obstruction of Congress is deeply troubling to anyone who knows the long history of Southern courthouses, Congressman Lee, where district attorneys openly coordinated with all-white juries and corrupt judges to cover up acts of racial terror. This is maybe, Yara, why we must mourn. With patience and decorum, Mitch McConnell has brought Southern justice to the United States Senate in the 21st century. Now, what does that mean? It means it's the kind of justice we saw, or injustice we saw, in 1955, when racial terror surged in response to the Supreme Court Brown decision. The white men who brutally murdered Emmett Till were acquitted by an all-white jury. The prosecutor, the judge, and the local media worked in tandem to cover up the truth. And then the perpetrators who were protected against double jeopardy, they went through a trial, but it was already decided from the beginning. And then they were protected against double jeopardy. And after they were assured of their double jeopardy, then the evidence came out and they admitted their guilt to Look magazine. We've seen this before, and Senate Leader McConnell is bringing Southern justice to the United States Senate. In the summer of 1964, when three civil rights workers disappeared while investigating a church burning in Philadelphia, Mississippi, local authorities told the FBI their investigations had found nothing but hundreds of college students from the nation's elite universities had turned the nation's attention on Mississippi that Freedom Summer, and the FBI could not simply move on as usual. They spent the entire summer combing the area for more evidence, and in the end, they found a literal cover-up. Andrew Goodman, Mickey Swanner, James Cheney had been murdered and buried in a local dam as a part of a conspiracy, and they found other bodies in the same dam. The conspiracy had included the Ku Klux Klan, the Philadelphia Police Department, the Neshoba County Sheriff's Department, the local prosecutors, the judges. And in 2 months of investigation to expose one cover-up, the federal authorities found, it took the federal government to undo the cover-up and find 8 other African Americans, but they were never acquitted of state-based murder charges because there was a cover-up. We who are heirs of America's civil rights struggle know how fragile and hard-won our multi-ethnic democracy is. For generations after the end of Reconstruction, anybody who dared to believe that the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments guaranteed them rights of all full citizenship, they were subject to terrorism by local law enforcement. If a crime was committed to rig the next election, it was covered up. This was the everyday practice of Southern justice under Jim Crow. If somebody was lynched, it was covered up. People like John Lewis, who we ought pray for in these days, who voted as a member of the House to impeach Donald Trump for seeking foreign help to rig the 2020 elections, went to jail and faced beatings in the 1960s to ensure free and fair elections. And a half century later, we have fewer voting rights protections in America than we did in 1965 when the Voting Rights Act was signed into law because of the gutting of Section 5. And as the majority leader in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, covered up the voter suppression efforts that guaranteed him a Senate majority long before he was called to cover up for Donald Trump's efforts to rig the next election. Americans remember from the Nixon impeachment that the cover-up is evidence of the crime. But it is more than that. Time and time again, the civil rights movement has learned that the cost of the cover-up is democracy itself. When the people who have power